The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. Coming up later in the show, Ali Moreno will be here as we'll be waxing lyrical about Cristiano Ronaldo, who made it 101 international goals today. We'll start, though, by focusing on France's victory over Croatia, a 4-2 win. Thoroughly entertaining game. Joining us, Stevie Nicol, Julien Laurent and Frank Leboeuf. Before Frank shouts at me and says it wasn't entertaining, it was boring, I'm going to go to Jules first and say, look, at least you had six goals. Anyone who watched England would have taken one.
That's right. And I think England were even worse than France. But the truth is, France didn't play well at all for the first 40 minutes of the game. And miraculously, we're ahead at halftime, despite Croatia playing really well in that first half. It was a bit better at times in the second half. But I think this team is still trying to adapt and to learn how to play in this new formation, new system in the 3-4-1-2 with Antoine Griezmann as a number 10. I'm far from convinced that this is a good position for him, but he played there again tonight. Was slightly better than against Sweden at the weekend. There were some good things again and some very negative things, I thought, but at least we saw Dayot Upamecano at the back getting more minutes and especially the debut for Eduardo Camavinga at 17 and 303 days, becoming the youngest player since 1914 to make his debut for France. And what a prodigy he is as well, and how good he looked tonight.
Frank, of course, played in that side. Frank, you take a look at Camavinga, and what impressed me so much is that he had such a positive effect on everyone around him. He just seemed to lift everybody, which is quite something for a 17-year-old debutant.
Yes, exactly, Daniel. It's why I think he's exceptional. As soon as he comes on the field, you can feel that he brings something very positive to the squad. Changes the rhythm of the squad, making the right choices to make sure that the old team will go forward and will pace up any actions that they want to achieve. So that's him. And I said that last week when he came on with Rennes on the first day of the Ligue 1 against Lille, where he came also on for 30 minutes and changed the pace of the game, the rhythm of the game, the mentality of the players. And Rennes came back and drew against Lille away from home. Tonight it was exactly the same. The guy is 17, but something happens when he comes on the field, and you can feel it and you can see it, and you just can agree to anybody who bets on that little boy. He's going to be exceptional, but really exceptional very soon if he's away from injuries.
He just oozes superstar quality, Jules.
He's incredible. I agree with Frank. I mean, he's a prodigy. This is one in a generation type of player, really. When you would have seen him at 15 years old, and Guy Stéphan, who is Didier Deschamps' first assistant with the national team, always says that he saw him as a 15-year-old first when he was playing for the under-18 at Rennes. He was already playing two edge above. In the under-18 French league final, if you want. And he was incredible. He was bossing the game, and you had no doubts then that he could make it big. And then he made his debut with Rennes when he was 16. And every time there's a step up, he goes and rises to it. And this is incredible. He will discover the Champions League this season with Rennes, going straight into the group stage, the national team, as we said tonight, and training the whole week with the squads. He played well in Ligue 1 the last two seasons. And he's got that talent, but also the maturity, the intelligence. And it's an incredible story if you look into it. His parents and the family arrived in France from Angola, where they escaped the civil war when he was 2 years of age. They almost lost everything when he was 10, when their house burned in the little village where they lived in Brittany, in French Brittany. And it's just that talent was there from a very young age. And I think France, again, and Rennes are very lucky to have such another prodigy kids.
A lot of hype around him, Frank, and a lot of hype, obviously, around Upamecano, who got his goal today, but at some times looked a little suspect at the back.
Yes, and it's when you want to say to our viewers that playing for a club is one thing and playing for the national team is something very, very much different, and you reach another level. And we could see that tonight, where I found Upamecano quite clumsy, making silly mistakes, where I never seen him doing that with Leipzig, and it can be only because of the pressure that you receive when you play with a national team shirt. So he's going to get better. The question mark is, isn't it too early for him to be with the national team? Hopefully for him, no. But tonight he showed lots of weaknesses at the back. When he had the ball, especially, lost it with silly mistakes. He scored a goal, and as we say in France, it's the tree who hides the forest. But many mistakes in the forest.
I like that. Stevie, you're obviously a big fan of him. Where do you stand on this? Like, is it too early for him to make this step up so quickly, or do you throw him in and just see if he can swim?
Well, I don't think you can say he's been thrown in, because he's played the last couple of games on merit, and deservedly so. You know, in the Champions League this season, he's been outstanding. He's been one of the best centre-backs, in my opinion, in the Champions League. So, you know, international football completely takes you out of your comfort zone from club football, because in club football you're playing with the same players every time you step on the field. It's the same system pretty much every time. When you go to international football, it changes and it takes you out your comfort zone. And the fact that he's 21, I think, is why in these last couple of games he's been a little bit insecure, probably. But at the same time, I don't think it's ever too soon when somebody's shown the type of ability and form and the maturity at club level that he has. And you know what? Everybody's made mistakes, whether it's international football or domestic football, but you have to make mistakes to learn from it. And if he can play for France and he can make mistakes and they still win games, then that way he's going to learn, but it's not going to affect the outcome of the game.
Jules, we were speaking to Nagelsmann, the Leipzig manager, about the future of Upamecano, and he said he's going to stay now.
I think so. I think the summer that he should have gone was last summer. There was a lot of clubs, especially in England, who were keen on him. He since signed a new deal until June 2023, which are much higher, I think, really close than the one he had last summer for €60 million. So it'd be very hard now for anyone to go and get him. And if you want to get him this summer or now, you would have to pay a lot of money, and same next season, because I agree with Stevie. I think he would get better and better. And sorry if the question was not for me, by the way.
No, I thought it was for me. And I was going to say, Dan, you know, If I'm another team, if I'm a Man United or any of the big boys, I just go and get this guy. I know he's not the finished article, but you go and get him. But I think from Upamecano's point of view, another year where he is will be fantastic for him. I've already said that I think he's really matured quickly already, and he's going to be in a club, in a place that he is absolutely 100% comfortable. And so in 12 months' time, with another great year behind him, he will be more secure in himself, and he'll be a better player. So, you know, it won't hurt him personally to stay there for another season.
Meanwhile, Jules, of course, no Kylian Mbappe today. He tested positive for COVID, added to the long list now of PSG players who won't be available for the start of the season. What's the reaction been like in France to this?
It's been quite crazy. I mean, we've had many issues with players testing positive since Ligue 1 restarted. In pretty much in every single club in the top flight, there's been cases. The protocol in France is very, very strict, far stricter than any other league who restarted back in June or July, for example. If you have four tested positive in your squad, whoever they could be, like young players, for example, or bench players, your game has to be postponed, which might well happen for the Thursday game between Lens and PSG, depending on what comes now in the next 2 days for Paris. But it's been bad. Obviously, the reaction, if you just look at PSG, has been strange, because six out of those seven players who have tested positive went to Ibiza on holidays straight after the Champions League final. Neymar, Paredes, Di Maria, Navas, Icardi and Marquinhos, spending a lot of time together, also spending time partying there. And we know that Ibiza is a cluster for the virus right now. Mbappe went to Monaco, where there's also cases, Niko Kovac, the Monaco manager, being one of them. But it also shows that it's not just because you went to Ibiza, there's other players from other clubs who went there and who didn't test positive. So it's hard to blame it maybe on PSG letting the players go away to Ibiza, maybe on the players themselves going to Ibiza. I don't know, I wasn't there, I didn't see what they did. But it is really strange, and it's just not good when you think that PSG will start their season potentially without all those seven players that I've just mentioned, or some of them at least, for the Lens game on Sunday, but more importantly for the Marseille clash on Sunday at the Velodrome.
Meanwhile, let's turn our attention to England, Jules, and I just want to stay with you first, because obviously Mason Greenwood and Phil Foden sent home in disgrace after getting girls into the hotel amongst this COVID bubble. I'm interested to get the temperature in England and the reaction to it, because we've seen it all over the newspapers. Are people outraged? Are they sympathetic because they're young boys? Where's the gauge been?
I think his outrage has been certainly the first reaction. Now maybe things are slightly different. Gary Neville on English television tonight saying, like, listen, they are kids at that age. We all made mistakes, maybe different type of mistakes, but they will learn from it. Of course, it's a disgrace. And of course, they behave badly and they made a huge error. But, you know, we can forgive them. They are young. They're very talented. They're learning to be more professional. They're learning all of that. And in a way, I think he was giving them a pass in a bit. And I think he certainly expects, and a lot of people do, that they will be back at some point, because they are the future of the England national team. And again, if they learn from this mistake and become better from it, then I think you could forget about it. But there's also a lot of people who said that was an absolute disgrace, especially in the current context. I mean, it's everybody's opinion, I guess. But I think that if you just look at the pitch and how bad England went tonight, and for me, Gareth Southgate is mostly to blame, but I think Foden and Greenwood could have made a big difference had they been involved, had they not made that mistake at the weekend.
Stevie, what's your reaction to it all?
Well, I think all the criticism is only going to help the two players out. You know, when you're young and you're joining the national team, you turn up when you're told. You sit down when you're told. It's yes or no, sir. Three bags full, sir. You don't do anything. And the fact that they've tried to do what they did and bring girls in the hotel, regardless of this, this being a pandemic, is ridiculous. But the fact that it is a pandemic, I mean, you talk about, you know, there's a fine line between being just young and dumb and just being a big-time Charlie. And I'm afraid, if nothing else, the fact that they're getting slaughtered in the press at home will do nothing but good for them. And I'm glad that he sent them home. I'm glad they couldn't play, because had they played and done well, then it sends the wrong message. So they deserve all the criticism they can get. And to do what they did is just, I mean, it is stupidity, but if they learn from it, then they won't do it again.
Frank, do you agree with Stevie? This could be the kick up the backside they need to settle down and focus on their sport?
Hopefully, yes. But it's more on their mentality, I think, that I'm concerned about. And as Stevie said, you know, when you're for the first time called by the coach to play with the national team, and you know you have two games, one on Saturday and one on Tuesday, well, you have to have a very strict life for 4 or 5 days, which is not a big deal, you know, for a football player and just for a human being. So just be concerned about the fact that you have to sleep well, eat well, and play well, and that's it. And you will think about other pleasures in other days. So it's a good lesson to take. Hopefully, it's going to change their mind. Of course, you have the COVID, you have the pandemic, but it's also, I remember the first time that I was called with the national team. I mean, that's crazy to think that the guys, you know, straight after the game, the first thing they think about is getting some other pleasures, where the real pleasure is to be with the national team, to play football and to enjoy it and to take 100% of it. And those other things, you will have time for that. Don't worry.
One thing is for sure, Stevie. There was no pleasure in watching England today.
None at all. Yeah, it wasn't a great game. You know, I think in some ways, the way Southgate set them up, they were going to fail. You know, three at the back to me normally means that you're trying to get an extra player forward. And so playing 3-4-3, on paper, it looks like you've got three forwards, but the truth is, you've got two wide guys in Trippier and Alexander-Arnold, who's 40 is whipping balls in the box. And if you're going to play two players like that and have two players in the middle of the park who are defensive midfielders and who are never going to get in the box, then the front three have to be in the penalty box. And the fact is, Sancho doesn't want to be a guy getting on the end of crosses, and Raheem Sterling doesn't want to be a guy getting on the end of crosses. So it was left to Harry Kane on his own anytime the ball came in the box against three or four defenders. So I think they were kind of set up to... I know he was trying some things, Gareth Southgate, but I hope when he sees this game back, which he will, he'll just say, fail and not do it again, or not do it with these players and have a different mix of players. So positivity, not a lot. They had one chance with the last kick of the game. They got cleared off the line. They might have stolen it, but they didn't deserve to win the game, and probably the Danes did.
Stevie, a lot of people rightly asking questions about Southgate at the moment.
I'm not so sure. You know, he's blooded another couple of players. You know, Phillips and Cody got their first caps today. You know, you've got the likes of Foden and Greenwood, obviously, who have come in. So he's given players some time on the field to see how they deal with international football. He's also changing the system a bit. So, you know, this is not the time to be getting on his back. This is the time to sit back and see what's going to unfold in front of you. Because it is clear that he's trying things and he's trying to blood some players. So now is the time to get off his back and let him do his job. Listen, when it really comes to the crunch, that's when he should be judged. Not now, when he's trying to figure out what is best for England and for the team.
Meanwhile, the PFA announced today that Kevin De Bruyne, the Player of the Year, right choice for you, Frank?
Yes, I mean, Kevin De Bruyne is absolutely fantastic, and I have no doubt that everybody will think the same that I do, because, I mean, the way he behaves on the field, the way he plays, the way he thinks about football is rare. I mean... And he feels the way we see him making passes means for me that he feels the game before everybody else, that he knows exactly what his teammate's going to do. And he showed it so many times. And we wait for that because we want something spectacular and exceptional. And he delivers that almost every single game that he plays. So, yeah. It's a nice silverware for him because he deserves it. Yeah, I agree with the PFA. Yeah,
Stevie, you said you would have voted for Mane.
Oh well, hold on a second. I didn't actually say that. I said that if Mane won it over De Bruyne, I would have had no problem with it. But the fact that De Bruyne has won it, I'm not going to argue with it. The guy is fantastic. As was Mane. They're two different types of players. So, you know, you can't get a wrong answer. Mane's more direct. He goes at defenders. He scores goals. He assists. You know, De Bruyne does all these things, but he sees a pass that nobody else in the Premier League this season has been able to pick out. Some of the blind balls he's put through for his forwards have been absolutely sensational. Some of the balls he's whipped in behind. You know, so as a pure footballer, I would say he's probably been the best footballer in the Premier League. But, you know, you started by saying I thought Mane should win it. I have no problem with De Bruyne because he is superb.
The PFA also announced the team of the season as well. There it is in all its glory. We'll be discussing that tomorrow with Ian Dark, who is with us. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast.
And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You just can't stop him from scoring goals. Cristiano Ronaldo with a brace today in Portugal's victory over Sweden, meaning that he has now got 101 international goals. Just eight adrift for Ali Dai, who holds the record. We welcome in our own Ali, whose goal-scoring record not quite that prolific. Ali, you were keeping your eye on this on this Portugal game. Ronaldo, he loves it.
He loves it. But I think you're wrong, Dan. You can't stop him. The key is that you have to get a bee sting that gets infected, and then he can't play.
It's true.
Now, that's how you stop him. The truth is that Cristiano Ronaldo must have been sitting against Croatia on the sidelines thinking, man, I could have scored a hat-trick in this match, and I can score a hat-trick in the next match. And it just feels like every time he's out on the field that he is going to provide you with something special. And it's what we saw today in a game in which Portugal was not nearly as dynamic or explosive as they were against Croatia, against a team that was far more organized in Sweden. Well, you know what? It is Cristiano and Cristiano time. And I think the other thing that he looks at for this team as he's watching from the sidelines against Croatia is that there's a lot of talent, attacking talent in this group. So he must think to himself, you know what? I don't have to carry offensively this team. I don't have to be creating everything and anything there is to do in the attack. I can sit back, take good positions, and I'm going to provide my quality. But there's so much talent around me that these young guys are going to run and they're going to create opportunities, and I'm going to be there to finish those opportunities. But if need be, I can also be spectacular because he still has that in his game. Outstanding from Cristiano Ronaldo.
Stevie, what always strikes, I think, everyone who watches Ronaldo, that he's 35, yet he still seems to have the same hunger of when he was 18. He always wants the ball, and he always wants to score. That's quite unique, isn't it?
Well, it's certainly unique for somebody of 35 years of age. You know, when you start getting the other side of 30, then all those things that you say that he wants right now, the hunger and the desire, is absolutely not only just as good as it was when he was 25, but it seems to be even stronger at 35. That is pretty unheard of. And quite frankly, I'll be shocked if he doesn't end up being the highest international goal scorer. And that 100% will be down to, has there ever been a player, regardless of ability, who has the hunger and the desire to put the ball in the back of the net than Cristiano Ronaldo? I don't think there has been one.
Stevie makes a good point. He's going to keep playing until he's 45, 50 to break this record, Jules, won't he?
Yes, although he won't need to. Won't need to, because I think by the end of this season, probably the record will be beaten if he continues like this, or at least at the start of next season, and he will still be playing for sure. I think what's fascinating, really, if you look at the goals tally, his goals tally, and before he was 30 and after he turned 30, and between the age of 30 and today, he scored 49 in 47 caps, which is incredible, really. A bit like Ibrahimovic also, after the age of 30, was far more prolific than before 30, probably because the day game has evolved and Cristiano is playing differently now than he was 10 years ago, for example, of course. But it's just fascinating how after the age of 30, he can have those kind of records. And I agree with Stevie, of course, he's going to beat the record of Ali Dai. And I don't think anyone then will come and beat him ever, because I don't think those kind of records, again, can be beaten by anyone else but someone like Ronaldo.
Ali, this hasn't even been put up on YouTube yet, but I can also already see the YouTube comments, which is from Ronaldo fans going, look at this, take that, Lionel Messi lovers. And then Messi lovers going, oh yeah, but who's he scoring against? San Marino, Faroe Islands. It's much more difficult in CONMEBOL.
And it's a fair point, because if we look ahead in the schedule for Portugal, they have a friendly coming up against Andorra. So if you're thinking at some point he's going to get another hat-trick, this may be it. And while there is an argument to be made that, yes, there have been a few layups along the way, you don't score 101 goals just based on layups. Because, yes, he scored a hat-trick against poor teams and teams that have their issues and have their challenges. But he's also scored a hat-trick in the World Cup against Spain. he's also scored a hat-trick in a World Cup qualifying matchup against Sweden in a playoff. And so the big moments are the sort of situations in which Cristiano Ronaldo is at his best. And we have seen that from him at club level and at country level. And international competition, club competition, it doesn't matter. In big moments, there's nobody in the world that likes to be in front of the camera more so than Cristiano Ronaldo. And whether you like his game, you like his personality, you like the posture, you like the arms flailing around, it doesn't really matter because the records speak for themselves and the productivity speak for themselves. And while, yes, he may have scored against San Marino, he may score against Andorra coming up next month, 101 goals is still a whole bunch of goals. And you still got to be there to score them, and you still got to be there to tap them in. And he's done that better than just about everybody else, except Ali Daei. But I have to say, Ali, it's all coming to an end soon.
Jules, Ali mentioned it before, this offensive talent that is now around Ronaldo, and we're looking ahead to Euro 2021. We talk about Belgium, we talk about France and England at length. Portugal, there or thereabouts, aren't they?
Of course they are, and if you watch them against Croatia as well on Saturday night, they were very impressive going forward, especially Bruno Fernandes and Joao Felix and Bernardo Silva, who got injured tonight quite early on. And then they still have a bunch of youngsters coming through as well, very, very talented ones. And other like Diogo Jota, who are getting there and keep improving season after season. So they've got an incredible talent attacking-wise, and I think Ali was right. I think that in a way takes pressure off Cristiano Ronaldo, in the sense that I think there was a time with Portugal, especially, that he thought, I have to do everything, almost create my own chances, and then I will have to score. And now he knows that the ball is going to come. I mean, today, one is a free kick, wonderful free kick, and then the other one is a shot in the top corner. But he also knows that the crosses will come. He knows that the chances will come. He knows that Bruno Fernandes and Bernardo and Joao Felix and all those players will also play for him. And I think that's when you're 35 and in the kind of form that he's been with the national team for the last few years, as we've been saying, it's a great asset to have for you.
That's pretty much as you'll hear Jules talk in the next edition of the Gavin Jules podcast. They are reunited at last. Be sure to check it out. The latest episode drops on Thursday.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
September 18th, then, sees the start of the Bundesliga, defending champions Bayern Munich taking on Schalke. Looking to push them all the way this year will be Borussia Dortmund. They're taking on Borussia Mönchengladbach. And also Leipzig will be looking to close the gap on the top team as well. They kick off against Mainz. Of course, they'll be without their talisman striker Timo Werner, who made that big money move to Chelsea in the summer. Julian Nagelsmann believes that he will be a success in the Premier League.
The way Timo plays, I think, fits very good to the Premier League. I think he will be a very important player for Chelsea. They also signed another good player from the Bundesliga. So it's a really, really interesting team with young guys. Want to fight for the title again. The very successful days are in the past, so they want to improve in the future. They have a young manager, I think, who did it very well in the last season, get more experience now as a manager. So I think it's very interesting for Timo. I think I told him as well that Chelsea could be the perfect decision for him. Because they were not that successful in the last years and they want to be successful in the future, and he could be a very important part for the way of Chelsea. And I think the Premier League, with his speed and physical playing, I think Timo fits perfect, and he will score a lot of goals for Chelsea. I'm sure about that.
Stevie, is it a little cynical of me to think that he's being very nice to Timo Werner, who abandoned the club before the Champions League? Or is that just me being nasty?
Yeah, I think you're just being nasty. Yeah, I don't think there was any animosity at all between him and the club. You know, I think it's particularly difficult for a player when you pretty much gone somewhere else, but you're actually still in the old building. It's a little strange. And I think probably it was the best thing for Leipzig that he went, because I think it would have had a poor effect on the rest of the team. So, no, Nagelsmann's, from what I believe, he's an honest guy, no-nonsense guy, tells it how it is. And if he's telling me that this is a great move for Werner, I actually agree with him, because I also think that it's a perfect move for him.
How many goals is he going to get this season, Ali?
I must say about 18. Ooh. 18 goals for Timo Werner.
Yeah,
I think it's a solid number, and it's a productive number, and it's one that it has to do more with the fact that there is a lot of talent around him that will create opportunities for him as well. So assuming that Chelsea is this open and expansive team that we think they're going to be, and that they do enough defensively, there are going to be opportunities presented to Timo Werner. It's whether he takes advantage of those opportunities. He's a guy that gives you flexibility in attack. He can come from wide areas. He can come from the middle. We have seen him be underneath at times. The speed is there. The strength is there. Timo Werner seems to be made for the Premier League. And I can also tell you that the very sort of soft-spoken and straightforward approach of Julian Nagelsmann, a very understanding of the situation, it's also a case for him to say, you know, it's perfect for Timo Werner to go to the Premier League. It may be perfect for me as well in the future. So anybody watching this right now, just look at the quality of coach that you have. And more importantly, the quality of human being that you'll be getting if you have a part of your team.
See, that's some cynicism. I knew it was going to come out sometime. Jules, is he in your fantasy team, Werner?
It's not, no. Only because I want to see if how he starts, if he needs a bit of time to adapt, how this Chelsea team will play, if all those new players will gel. You know, we're talking half the team will be new, will be changed from last season. So I want to see first, before they play all together, and how this is panning out, before bringing maybe him and Havertz, Ziyech, maybe Pulisic as well back in the team.
Over under on 18 goals for you, Stevie?
I'm going to go just under. I'm thinking along the 14-15 mark, for the very reason that Jules brought up there. He's going into a side, there's going to be a lot of new pieces. They won't all settle quickly. And so that's why I'm going under 18. I'm going to, as I said, 14 or 15, because he can put the ball in the back of the net, and he will get chances regardless of whether all the pieces are fitting quickly or not.
Jules, as we're talking about Chelsea, just a word on Edouard Mendy. We talked about it on yesterday's show, the possibility of him joining Chelsea. Is this happening?
Yes, I think it will happen for around 30 million euros for a player that Rennes bought just a year ago for 4 million from Reims. And he's had a wonderful season, really. He's a very talented late bloomer goalkeeper. If you think that, you know, 5 years ago, he almost quit football. There was no team for him. He was going to the job centre, for example, to find another job because he really didn't believe he could make it. And yet he had to go through the lower leagues to go all the way to the top, and he showed his determination and also the talent and the self-belief that he had. I think it's a great story, fantastic story. He's a really, really good guy. Super tall, very good in the air, good on his line as well. Of course, there's a lot of room for improvement there because, as we said, he's a late bloomer, hasn't really played much at the top level. So he will go there and will learn a lot, I think, with Christophe Lolichon and everybody at the club. But I think for that price and for the potential that he has, it would be a very good signing for Chelsea.
Boys, thank you very much. By the way, they're answering your tweets today over on our YouTube channel in Extra Time. Be sure to go over there and check it out.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Manchester United released their third kit today, and boy, is it something. Not quite sure what. It created quite the stir on social media. Stevie, let's start with you. Do you like the zebra stripes?
It's absolutely ridiculous. It's not even remotely anything like a football strip. You could, if somebody said to you that, what is that? You would have no idea. It's even a rotten top just for wearing down the beach. I wouldn't go in the water with it on. I mean, it's just awful. Seriously.
Right. Stevie, on the fence about it. Jules?
I mean, I've got no words. I mean, it was leaked a few weeks ago, and I think everybody, including me, thought, this can't be. You know sometimes how shirts are leaked and they're actually not the real shirt? And I thought, someone is all pranking us, and they can't do it. Even a third shirt, a third kit, they cannot do that. And yes, they did.
But is it not ironic, Jules? Is that kind of where it's going with all of this? And the shorts as well?
Well, I mean, what do you need irony for your third kit? I don't understand.
Is it
like,
so bad?
You can have a different colour.
Is it so terrible that actually it's cool?
It can't be.
No. I'm trying.
I mean, yeah. I mean, that's not fashion. I mean, I'm all for legacy and remembering, and I believe that maybe they played with a similar shirt back in the 20s. There's a reason why they stopped playing in that shirt in the 20s and never again until 100 years later, because it's too ugly.
Speaking of ugly shirts, what are you wearing, Ali?
This was our third uniform back in college for me, and I am proud to say that I actually fit quite nicely into the shirt. But yes, I got some of the stripes
going
on.
You look like a jockey.
Yes. Well, that's it. In honor of the Kentucky Derby.
Poodles.
You see what I'm saying? Yeah, I went with that.
Horse.
I went with that. I would be a little heavy for a horse. I'll say that much. I can also tell you that it's while it's zebra-like, it's also a little Beetlejuice to it. There's that look to it as well, and out of control, kind of like Beetlejuice. So, either way, it's not. There's no room for this to be the third kid or the 20th kid. It's just awful.
It is indeed, and I think on that note, I will say thank you very much, gentlemen. there'll be much more of us to come tomorrow, thanks to Frank as well. Stay tuned, though. Extra Time is next. Welcome into Extra Time. Thank you, as always, for your tweets. We've got Stevie, we've got Ali, and back from a holiday. Look at that, tanned. Oh. I'm going to wear a white shirt underneath, really to emphasise how I got a lovely tan in Portugal. Julien Laurent. Jules, did you have a nice
big
break?
Big timer.
Yeah, I know, big timer. Look, he's got a watch on and everything.
Very nice. Thank you very much. It was very good.
Oh, lovely. OK. How do you feel, Stevie, about Danny Rose's argument with Jose Mourinho? And for Stevie and Ali, do those types of interactions happen often between players and the coach? Well, this is referring to the Amazon documentary about Tottenham Hotspur, where you see Danny Rose coming in and ask Mourinho basically why he's not playing. And it's this awkward, you're kind of watching it through your fingers because, I don't know, it's just weird. Stevie, you must have had quite a lot of players coming in asking why you weren't playing.
Yeah, they would come in, but they didn't come in with that sort of attitude.
Right.
Because the point being that if you go to the coach or any of the staff with that attitude, the only thing that's going to happen is whatever you want isn't going to happen.
Sure.
So I actually witnessed Craig Johnston after getting substituted at Wembley, sitting down next to Joe Fagan and trying to... It was almost as if he was trying to talk him into putting him back on. You know, why did you take me off? Why? I was doing everything you asked me to. And Joe was like, aye, okay, shut up. For some reason, we sat right next to Joe Fagan. And he kept going on, and eventually Ronnie Moran said, Craig, just shut up.
Yeah.
So he just stopped. But
I'm sure he didn't use that phrase either, Stevie, did he?
No, he didn't. But no, that's unusual. But as I said, you go to a coach with an attitude like that, there's only one thing that's happened, whether you're right or wrong.
Ali, would you ever, or did you ever go to a coach and ask why you weren't playing?
Not in those terms. And I certainly did not go into the office of the coach and not only ask as to why I'm not playing, but also pointing out that the other guys are not doing the job either. Because at that point, now you are taking shots at your own teammates. Sure. And that's a line that you shouldn't cross regardless. So when you start talking about, well, other guys are not doing the job, then why am I not playing? That it just doesn't send a message. If I were Danny Rose, or in the case of my days as a player, I think there are ways to approach it. I do remember a conversation I had with Steve Sampson, the coach of the LA Galaxy at the time. I said, okay, all right, what can I do? Right. What can I do to get on the field? What is it that you need from me so that I have a clear idea as to what is it that would keep me in the starting 11 as opposed to keep me on the bench? And I think that's a far better way to approach it. Just being proactive in trying to get information from the coach. What are your expectations? And let me be the one that meets those expectations. If not, then just ride the bench, baby.
For Stevie, as a former Liverpool player who went on to coach, if you're Klopp and you deliver the Champions League and then the Premier League and you can't get any real investment in the team, are you fuming? Yes, I understand the world's a mess, but others are buying.
Well, I don't think you should be fuming because, you know, the club have previously backed you when you've needed it and when they've had the money. If the club don't have the money, then you can't go crying. You can't go doing a Jose Mourinho and just complain because you can't get money every time you want it. And I don't think Klopp's that type of guy. So, no, he's got nothing to be angry about. They've backed him with two record signings and Van Dijk and Alisson. So he can't complain at all. He just has to be patient, understand that he's got a good side and he needs to keep that good side playing until the funds are made available to him to strengthen or whatever he wants.
Is it smart for a club to sign numerous players that were relegated the season before, such as Newcastle are doing with the signings of Fraser, Callum Wilson and most likely Jamal Lewis? Is this because of the reduced price tags set on the players, Jules?
Yeah, I think that's the main reason why you do it. If Bournemouth had finished, I don't know, in the Europa League play today, Wilson or Fraser would have been far more expensive. I mean, Fraser was out of contract, but you get the idea. Of course, if you go down, Bournemouth said they can't expect the money that maybe they would have wanted had they stayed in the Premier League than if they go in the Championship. And also the players probably push harder because they don't want to be in the Championship for a move and maybe have a bit of leeway as well with their club to say, let me go, this is a good offer, this is 25 million, even if you wanted 50, maybe 6 months earlier or a year earlier, things have changed. So I think this is normal, and a lot of clubs actually are looking for who's going down and see what players they can get from those teams, like Norwich, like Bournemouth, and get them to stay in the Premier League, for example. And it's not really surprising, and it's quite common.
Jules, what recruitment do PSG need for next season, and do you think they can reach the Champions League final again?
No.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think they can build on the success they had this season. I think they will need more bodies in midfield, better players in midfield, some a bit more physical, because I think they certainly we saw against Bayern Munich at times that in terms of physicality in that midfield, they were a bit light. Whether they can go and get someone who's quite strong, let's say like Milinkovic-Savic at Lazio, it's another matter. I think they need two full-backs, but certainly a right-back because Kjaer is not good enough for that kind of level. But again, those right-backs who are very good are either very expensive or impossible to go and get at the club they are, so they have to be a bit more creative. So there's a few positions where if they strengthen well and buy well, then they will certainly be a better side and have more chance to go again quite far in the Champions League. The problem is, right now they don't have the kind of money that they really need to improve the squad, and that would be a problem that they would have to sell first, someone like Draxler, for example, maybe some youngsters too, to go and get a midfielder, maybe two even, and then a right back as well. So it would be a difficult summer, difficult month between now and the end of the transfer window on October the 5th.
Ali, why is Barca not trying to sign defenders instead of forwards? They can actually score goals, but they can't defend.
Well, you can copy and paste that question and ask that for the last decade for Barcelona. It is a valid question, and there is no simple answer other than the fact that there aren't that many defenders out there that you can go and get. And we have talked about the limitations of Barcelona financially and some of the difficulties that they have. So if you're going to go get what we consider a world-class defender, you're going to have to pay world-class price. And I just think as a philosophy for the club, if they're going to spend world-class money, it's going to be on an attacking player. It seems to be more of a cultural thing with the club than the need base of the club. They've needed a defender for a long time. Umtiti hasn't been the answer, whether that's injury or lack of performance. Lenglet does a job, but he has mistakes in him as well. Gerard Piqué has had his issues. Those are well documented as well. He'll play well for a long stretch of time, and then he'll have his struggles too. And then you just consider what's happening on the outside back position. Jordi Alba is getting older. They haven't had an answer for the right back position since the departure of Dani Alves. They've tried Semedo, not quite. They've tried Sergio Roberto. Well, he's not a right back. And so, yes, there are issues defensively for Barcelona, but there have been issues defensively for Barcelona for years now, and they haven't addressed them then. I don't know why they're going to start now.
Right then, Stevie, based on the results thus far in the Nations League, who are your top three favourites to win Euro 2021?
France, Belgium. And then after that, I think there's probably four or five countries that are just absolutely very much the same. You know, England could be good, Germany could be good. You know, Spain will always give anybody a game. There are just so many sides that are just a little bit on the same level that I would stick my neck out only and say that France and Belgium are the two standouts for me.
Jules, do you part-time as PSG manager? You and Tuchel look the same.
What?
Wow.
Come on.
Jules. You can't take that. No. That's not good.
Mm-hmm. No.
Nah, and Tommy Tuchel will be well pleased with that.
What's going on now? Come on.
Tommy will be delighted.
Yeah. Who's your doppelganger? Who do people mistake you for, Jules? Anyone?
No, not really, no. I mean, there's that French tennis player, Richard Gasquet, and there's a little bit something.
No!
There's a bit.
There's nothing
yeah,
like...
Yeah, I promise you.
You're nothing like younger, Gasquet.
Now I'm too handsome.
Hey, you gotta let your hair grow a little younger, bit. You need a, like a 2-day beer going on as well.
With
Jules,
a cap,
then you can
with
get
a
in the conversation.
Tell you what, you're more like Francoise Durl and Flamin Gasquet.
Not sure about that either.
I don't know who that is. Right.
Well, yourself's probably better.
Ali, were you ever carded for diving? Have you ever had an important dive in a big match?
Oh, I can't wait to hear the answer to this. I'll tell you what, I bet it's not as many as you should have had, put it that way.
First of all, it's not diving, it is drawing fouls. Second of all, yes, I have been carded for diving. And no, I usually did not dive, quote unquote, in this big moments, if you will. I wasn't just a flat out diver. I felt contact. It didn't take much for me to go down, but there was contact. I wasn't just the kind of guy that nobody
really
touched me and I just went down. That wasn't me.
Are you buying that, Stevie?
No, I'll take that. I'll take that. I can't honestly tell you that I saw him with no contact flop.
Right.
He wasn't a flopper. He was a smart take the contact and go down as if he'd been hit hard. I mean, he was clever that way. Used to get right up my nose.
Clearly you've let it go, Steve. You've turned the page.
Oh. Well, because I used to sit there with Marina, right? And you can see the build-up, and you can see when he's going to get it, and I'm sitting here with Marina going, right, this is going to be a free kick. Just watch this. And there you go. One of your smart Alec defenders would just get too tight to him. He'd go down, referee would absolutely eat it up for breakfast, and they'd end up with a free kick about 25, 30 yards for goal. It happened all the time.
That's it, gentlemen. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much. We'll be back tomorrow for more. Until then, goodbye.